Dave, good evening.
Stillman, how are you?
Dave, I'm doing fantastic. You are lucky, however, you're not in the room with me because this room smells like moldy Fritos. It smells so bad. I'm all sweaty.
That's your personal odor that's making it stink.
Yeah, and it's like a closed recording booth, so whoever comes in here next is going to basically die. How's
Yeah.
it smelling over there?
Oh, great. I've taken two showers today still, so I'm clean as can be.
Gotta wash all the
But
body fluids off after your shift.
I see patients in the primary care office now. I don't deal with that kind of garbage anymore. Yeah, I'm not touching anybody's feces anymore unless it's my daughter's.
Dave.
Speaking of feces, I brought a friend.
Now that's an intro to remember.
That is,
Zach,
yeah.
welcome back.
Hey, Steve,
Hello.
how you doing?
Great, man. We loved having you on last week.
And it smells great here, but I am not wearing any pants.
Nice. We got high standards.
Man, that sounds nice, actually. I might think about removing mine. I'm a little bit sweaty down there.
Okay. Hey, well, do what you want. I don't mind. All right, we got a big show packed. Can't wait. We're going to talk about the fair, which is one of the greatest things that happens in a county every year. We got a special episode of Small Talk. We have a brand new segment that Dave has invented. It's called
Yes.
Poetry Face Off.
You're welcome, Still. You're
Thank you.
welcome.
We got OTC, off the chain corporate hijinks, which is going to be a thrill a minute. And we've got Unchained Melodies, very special covers edition, and some book wisdom. So let's just plunge right in. We want to talk about the fair. State, county, I mean, World's Fair. All fairs are fair game here.
We just went to the county fair the other week. It wasn't super fun, but I think my fear of fairs goes all the way back to when I was about 18, the last
Fairphobia.
time I got on any fair ride. I got on the Tilt-A-Whirl. You familiar with the Tilt-A-Whirl?
Kinda. You'll have to explain it. I can never remember exactly which one.
So it's there. Every fair ride is the same. It's let's spin you as fast as you can possibly be spun. But this one, you're on a large circular platform. Everything's spinning. But then you're inside a little car of sorts with two other guys or two. Ideally, you're there with, I guess, with girls because that's what you're at the fair for.
You're there with guys, whatever.
I believe the Tilt-A-Whirl is what they rode in Sandlot and threw up on the
Oh,
chew.
yeah, I know that for sure. That's a movie I have definitely seen. Okay, so Tilt-A-Whirl.
I had almost the exact same experience. I threw up all over the Tilt-A-Whirl on my brown khaki pants I was wearing at the time, and I didn't say anything to anyone. I just got out of there as quick as possible, and I've never been on a spinning ride again. Ever tired.
Wow. This might surprise you to learn about me, Dave, but I don't like amusement parks. They kind of scare
What?
me. They're a little too intense. The rides make me nauseous. It's a little too much action happening for me.
Wait, there's something fun that you don't like, Steele?
Yeah.
This is really, I'm
Yeah.
taken back.
The thrill and the attraction of the fair is actually not in the rides. It's other things for me.
Like what? What are you talking about?
Well, when I was last in northern Idaho, I don't go there often, but I went to the Northern Idaho County Fair. I think it was the Bonner County Fair. And the thing that drew me was they had a booth, and it was like all black signage with big white lettering. So you know it just wants to grab your attention. And the biggest sign just said Giant Sausage.
Oh, that's going to reel you in every time.
So I get in line, and there is a woman wearing like a camouflage t-shirt that was probably like a 6XL. So I knew it was the line I wanted to be in. And then I look down, and it says hand-dipped corn dogs, cheesy fries with the Z, chili fries, curly fries, hand-dipped corn dogs, Dave.
So that's
And
what you got,
then
right?
I know I was close. And then I saw in the top right corner, it says Giant Indian Tacos. And the sign was so large that they had to put the word giant on like a 45-degree angle because it wouldn't all fit in the size of the type, the font that they had if they just put it vertical, you know, or horizontal. And then it said Bloomin' Onions, but they spelled Bloomin' B-L-O-O-M-U-N.
Ooh, that's extra good.
Well, the thing I've seen is they spell like Bloomin' Onions so that they both are spelled the same way. But they misspelled Bloomin', but not in a way that resembled the word onion. So I knew that was a good sign. And then it said underneath it, low carb. So that was the thing I ended up ordering. I just needed to get my low carb.
And, yeah, did it feel like the healthy option there?
Yeah, it was the healthy option. I mean, everything on the next booth next to it said giant. Giant funnel cakes, giant footlong corn dogs, giant elephant ears, giant sausage. I mean, it was just everything was giant. And the people there were giant. I just felt like a Lilliputian in the land of the giants. It was amazing.
Yeah, I find it hard to turn down a giant sausage or a hand-dipped corn dog. If you can get a giant hand-dipped sausage corn dog.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the thing is, the county fair is the place to find it. The other thing that was notable about this was the way that people were dressed. The first thing that caught my attention was there was a group of five people that were wearing like Civil War regalia, it seemed like military style hats, wool coats, and like heavy wool pants with white button up shirts underneath. It was a range of ages, but there was no Civil War reenactment event at all on the schedule for the fair. So I think they might have just been like a rural militia that just came to the fair. I really do. I don't know, but that's what I think. They had also the classic raffle. Usually when you go to a county fair raffle, what are the things that you've experienced them raffling or giving away?
A pig?
Yeah, that's one of the things you could get in like an agricultural county.
I've seen a lot of like hotel stays or vacation packages or something. I only do state fairs though, so.
Well, that's why. I mean, you got upper crust at the state fair. Well, this one was cool because it was a kind of handmade sign that had fallen down. So it was like half on the ground, half up in the air. And it was a homemade sign that just said firearms raffle.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you didn't even have to know what you're getting. You're just like, firearms, like, give me a ticket, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was good. There was also a booth that was dedicated to...
Whoa. You're just going to... You're not even going to say what firearms are? You're just going to leave us all hanging?
Well, I don't know. I assume that they were a mix of rifles and handguns and small bore and large bore. It was a little something for everything. This was a family fair, obviously, Zach.
I was thinking a little too literally on this one, and I was thinking some kind of, like, arms on fire.
Oh, no, like no, this was guns. Sorry, guns.
Some kind of, like, flamethrower arm, but...
My favorite, though, there was a booth that was set up, and it was a guy in a Hawaiian shirt that just looked like he had all these burst blood vessels in his cheeks, which is always a sign of authority. And they had a homemade sign as well that said, good free stuff, twice on it. And there was a big placard in the middle that said, why are so many evolutionary scientists abandoning Darwinian theory these days? So it was like this Christian anti-science Darwin booth. And they were passing out their literature.
Oh, I thought they were going to explain what was going on with all these Darwinian scientists.
No, it was good free stuff.
I don't want them to lose their faith still in Darwin.
Well, so many scientists turning away. And then, the highlight was there was a guy, he was wearing like a clear toupee, silver toupee, had a mustache, had a big old beer belly, and he was wearing a t-shirt. He was chatting up a woman who was holding like a 64-ounce Slurpee.
Nice.
And his shirt looked like it was written in neon, and it said, up all night, sleep all day.
Dudes know how to party. That's when you go to the fair, you go in your finery, whether that be Civil War garb, your best t-shirt, whatever it is, you're taking out your A suit, you're putting it on, and you're going to enjoy yourself.
Well, did he have a hat that said FBI, female body instructor, to go along?
No, I think he traded it in for a firearm at the raffle booth. That would have completed it. Those FBI hats are like a staple of Idaho State Fairs. I'm happy to report, though, that the fanny pack to a fair attendee ratio was a solid 1-to-1. I think it saw at least as many fanny packs as fairgoers. And the wraparound shades, they were definitely in the house.
So what, Zach, what do you wear when you attend your fairs? Fanny pack, shades, or what do you got?
Oh, I just go full on. It's not the front fanny pack. I go with the lumbar bag.
Oh, yeah.
That way you can fit more swag in it. I mean, and then I probably find my best Matt too. PI, I mean,
it provides a bit
shirt.
Of support.
Exactly. No, I just wear regular clothes and go. And it's, I've been going to the Arizona State Fair annually pretty much since I was like in junior high. I mean, the State Fair, so it's coming here in Arizona in like 2 weeks. And I just last night, I was like, hey, honey, guess what's coming up? She's like, what? I guess. And,
like our anniversary, honey? You remembered? And then you said no.
No, she's way more excited about the State Fair than our anniversary. No, so I told her State Fair, and she just got the biggest smile. It's a classier act than what the Idaho State Fair is, I believe.
Hey, this
but
was
just
the Idaho
barely.
County Fair, because there's nothing classier than the Idaho State Fair. I haven't even touched on that.
No, so, I mean, there's all the fried foods, just like every, you know, your standard state fair with fried butter, fried Skittles, fried...
Skittles.
I mean, it's just great.
And, the fried Twinkies, do you guys have those down there?
Of course.
Fried Twinkies are everywhere these days. I have my first Krispy Kreme burger there at State Fair.
Whoa.
Where they use, instead of a regular bun, they just use two Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh,
and then you just walk around and feel like a champ for 3 days afterwards.
But you can't put condiments on it, can you? Or do people put like ketchup and mustard and sauerkraut on?
Well, I asked the guy what he recommends, and he said go for it. So I went all out on that.
Can I ask Zach a question?
What's up?
We asked you last week about music. And I have to say, some of the big draws for me at state fairs actually have been the musical bands that I've seen. That was not a good sentence. I meant to say I have seen.
The musical bands?
Yeah.
No, at the fair, you can say
rather than a band of, like, jugglers or anything?
No, Steppenwolf. When I was in high school, Steppenwolf came. And I heard Magic Carpet Ride live.
Oh,
and it changed
ass.
My idea of what music could do. It was like a full body experience, pretty much.
No, there's definitely a tradition with state fairs and classic rock bands who really only had two or three classic songs showing up. But they'll do a full 3 hour set for those 15 minutes of songs that you really want to hear.
I think Dave saw Grand Funk at the state fair.
That was the Ostrich Festival, and it was fantastic.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, Ostrich Fest was a good time. No, I remember I had this buddy in high school who kept trying to get him to go to concerts. He wouldn't go. And then finally I'm like, hey, we're going to go to the state fair. There's a show going on. And it was a Steve Miller Band.
Ooh.
So we go, we watch Steve Miller Band. And of course we watch for 2 hours to pretty much just hear Fly Like an Eagle.
Nice.
And if I remember correctly, he saved everything for the very end just to do this giant finale of, we're going to keep you in the seats the whole time just to hear the three songs you came for.
Mm.
No, and then when it was all said and done, I don't think he's ever been back to another concert after that one.
So his only live music experience is Steve Miller Band at a state fair?
I'm pretty sure. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I wouldn't be surprised.
How can you top? I mean, once you taste perfection.
I mean, and then they've got other great things. Like, you know, I saw Weezer at the state fair, but like
really?
A year ago.
Oh, okay.
Like a year ago when they're far past their prime. Meatloaf is coming. That's who I've got slated. I'm trying to decide between Meatloaf and Brett Michaels.
Whoa.
Meatloaf.
Excellent choices. I might have to go, and they're playing back to back one night after another.
I say Brett Michaels. I'm a Brett Michaels guy.
No, come on.
Something to believe in. Every rose has its thorn. Come on.
Plus the entire Brett Michaels family grieving room over at the Barrows Neurological Center at the hospital.
What? I'm afraid I don't know this.
There's in Phoenix, we've got Barrows Neurological Center that I am well acquainted with when my wife had a brain injury. But there's this room there. Since Brett Michaels went there when he had his aneurysm or stroke or whatever it was that he had. And then he's got this whole room that's just like, ode to Brett Michaels. And that's where families go so they can hear like, hey, grandma had a stroke. She's not going to make it.
And it's just Brett Michaels all over the walls?
Yeah, but you can just watch Poison over and over on repeat TV.
Nice. And that's Brett Michaels' guitar right there.
Oh, it's his guitar right there. There's actually a handful of guitars where you can play donated by Brett Michaels.
Oh.
They're complete pieces of trash. But the cowboy hat is completely authentic there inside the trophy case.
I was holding out on you guys, but I saw Brett Michaels live in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
He opened for Kiss.
Did you get backstage?
No, I wasn't wearing a low cut enough top.
Brett Michaels actually visits the hospital on a regular basis. And when my wife was there, I was sleeping when he came by our room. And the nurse told me, hey, Brett Michaels dropped this off for you. And it's a teddy bear with a Poison t-shirt holding a rose.
That guy's a class act. I'll give it to him.
See, now you're voting for Brett Michaels, aren't you? Over Meatloaf. Yeah,
as soon as he runs for something, I'll vote for him.
He's running for state fair main stage show. Which one are you going to see?
Opening night, so should probably jump on it.
Would you say there's a worst band you've seen at a state fair, or is that not even a fair category?
Oh, Bob Dylan, hands down.
What? Bob Dylan?
Dave, it was only new songs and deep cuts. And then he played Lay Lady Lay once. But instead of doing like Lay Lady Lay, it was just like this. So the band's playing, you can tell it's Lay Lady Lay, and then it's Bob Dylan just go Lay Lay Lay. Lay Lay Lay. I was so excited for that show too.
Most people who've gone to see a Dylan show in the last 20 years were way pumped about it and then came out just like scarred for life. I'm going to play a bunch of songs I wrote when I was born again in the 80s. You're going to love these.
That's why you only go see Grand Funk. They're going to deliver every time. They're only going to play like 10 songs and you're going to know 7 of them.
Play that funky music, white boy, 15 times in a row.
That was actually not Grand Funk, but they could totally rock that track. It would not be an issue for them.
I thought that was Grand Funk.
Oh, guys. I could sing you most of their catalog right now, but I don't think we need to do that.
The next segment we have lined up is Small Talk. Small Talk is a segment where we help you carry the next awkward conversation you have in a social setting. Each of us are contributing anecdote, a story, something ripped from the news that caught our attention that we want to bring and give to you to help you impress people and wow them with your intelligence and just all around greatness. I want to start with Dave on this one, since you were about to sing Grand Funk. Let's go with Small Talk instead.
Okay, you're talking intelligence, engaging people, getting to someone on their level. This is the conversation you want to have. You go up to them, hey, my name's Dave. Let's go into Pauly Shore. Which is your favorite Pauly Shore movie?
Jury Duty.
Jury Duty is your top?
I saw that in the theaters twice. Tia Carrere, right? Or whatever her name was, isn't it?
Yeah. Wayne's World to Jury Duty. Terrific career choice.
That's the only movie I saw that she was in. I didn't actually see Wayne's World.
Also excellent.
No, my favorite Pauly Shore movie's definitely got to be Encino Man. But I still think his best role ever was Goofy Movie.
Oh, wow. Surprise choice.
The lead power of Cheeza? Forget that.
See, now, a lot of people, I think that comes slightly outside of what I would say is the established golden era, the Pauly Shore golden era. I don't know when the Goofy Movie was released, but that was kind of a renaissance for him, I think.
It was actually during the era. But we all know and love from 1992 to 1996 the Pauly Shore golden era, starting with Encino Man, a classic. Son-in-Law.
Ooh.
Really enjoy it.
Super hit.
Jury Duty.
Yeah.
Surprisingly funny. In the Army Now.
Also saw that one in the theater.
Who hasn't? I've seen that. And so far
just
of these.
A little buzz cut up top.
You're good, Zach.
Of these four movies I've listed so far, I've seen each of them minimum 3 times. Probably more like 5 to 6. And then, of course, Biodome, which was the one that led to the end of Pauly Shore's career.
Hey, Dave, I got a question.
Yeah.
Do you like your yogurt fruit at the bottom or stirred?
You got to stir it. But just
the... You get the reference, though, right?
I did.
From Biodome.
I never saw Biodome.
Still, you've never seen anything, it seems like.
No, I saw 2 movies from Dave's list of 5. That's like 40% is well above my normal. Like, Pauly Shore, I was so pleased that Dave was talking about movies that I had actually seen when I was a teenager. I may not remember them, but I did pay to go see it.
But if you go up to someone in their 30s or even late 20s, they know Pauly Shore, they've seen every one of these movies, and you've got a conversation immediately going. in the army now, what was the deal with, why were they purifying water? I don't quite understand how Polly got in there. Encino Man, you talk about wheezing the juice. It's hilarious. Every single one, you just have an open conversation that people are going to enjoy.
I will say, I don't think those Geico caveman commercials would even exist if it weren't for Pauly Shore.
I think a lot of things in our society would not exist without Pauly Shore. We have a lot to thank him for. And really, it's kind of a duty of each of us to watch each of these five movies again, just to remember this golden time in cinema.
How many Oscars did he win in that run? Was it one a year or two a year? I don't know what his average haul would have been, but...
Well, he has writing credits on some of these, so he was up
credits
for,
on the later half.
So he was up for multiple Oscars every year. Usually, Oscar would kind of duck him; they would think that they were too good for Pauly Shore. But he's got a room full of Golden Globes at home. He pretty much swept them every year.
Nice. Well, Dave, that's a great contribution to Small Talk. Our listeners are thanking you across the country right now. I'm going to try to follow it up. I know it doesn't raise, it's not quite to the standard, but this was something that was fairly awesome. There's a village in the southwest coast of Tahiti, and it has huge surfing waves. In the last 15 years, five surfers have died there, and then it's pretty intense. There's a guy, his name is Robbie Madison. He's a motocross legend, and he decided that he was going to put water skis on his motorbike, and he was going to surf big waves on a motorcycle in Tahiti. And he did it. I don't know how exactly he did it. He put a wheel with extra tread on it, and he just basically races a wave on a bike on the water with an engine that sounds like a, I don't know, like a lawnmower or something like that. It was incredible.
It's one of the most compelling videos you could ever see. It slowly builds. He's just driving his little motorbike along on a trail. All of a sudden, he's on water, and you're like, holy crap, how did he do this? And then before you know it, he's surfing, and you have lost control of your bowels.
It's like a 20-foot wave that swallows him at the end, and then you're just like, oh, man, he died, but it was totally worth it. That was great. He gave his life for something great.
Yeah, like our savior. Yeah, it was a Christian experience for me to watch that film.
Yeah, so on the topic of Christians, I mean, we've got Pauly Shore, who's the closest thing to the second coming. We've got this guy who gave his life. Zach, what do you have for us in Small Talk today along the Christological theme?
So I'm a pretty big Broadway fan. So, and there's this awesome new show out called Alexander Hamilton. That is, in fact, about our founding father, Alexander Hamilton, his role throughout the Revolutionary War, setting up the American banking system and the Federal Reserve. And it sounds like a great time. But the kicker is, it is the very first hip-hop-based musical on Broadway.
Whoa!
All hip-hop and R&B music, with the exception of when King George is singing, when it goes full Britpop. I mean, it's the music from it's really, really just intelligently written with these great allusions to other Broadway shows, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Stephen Sondheim, but then also allusions over to like NWA and Ja Rule lyrics and songs from the Roots, where you're getting all these different nods to the hip hop world as well. And it just brings everything in together for the weirdest, most unlikely story in all of Broadway. That's Alexander Hamilton, and I think we've got a quick clip for you guys, too. So this is when George Washington is trying to find a right-hand man, and he's going between a couple different guys, and he already knows he wants Alexander Hamilton. So we've got Andrew Burris, who's Hamilton's biggest rival. He eventually shot Hamilton in the play and real life.
Aaron Burr,
what a
jerk.
Douche.
Well, Alexander Hamilton did challenge him to the duel, so.
Oh, well, what an honorable man.
All right, let's roll the clip.
Okay.
Any hope of success is fleeting. How can I keep leading when the people I'm leading keep retreating? We put a stop to the bleeding as the British take Brooklyn. Night takes Rook, but look, we are outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned. We gotta make an all-out stand. Hey, yo, I'm gonna need a right-hand man.
Yeah.
Incoming. The battery down the battery, check the damage. We gotta stop them and rob them of their advantages.
Wow. So this is playing on Broadway right now, Zach?
This was, it started off Broadway. It just started its official Broadway run last month, and it's already won a slew of awards. It's going to be this year's big hit at the Tonys. Just a fantastic musical. And what's great about it is with the casting, there was absolutely no like, hey, we're trying to be political and forthright thing. It's just, who's the best guy we can get for each role? I don't care if he's white, black, Puerto Rican. So Thomas Jefferson's played by a black guy. I'm pretty sure George Washington's Puerto Rican. Alexander Hamilton's a mixed race, half Puerto Rican, half black guy. It's just, it's a really cool, really cool thing that they're doing.
It is great that, yeah, Broadway is very traditional with their certain kind of music and what they're always expecting. So it's interesting that it's been so long, they're finally breaking that barrier.
And it's great to know also that Broadway finally recognized that there are gay men of every race, you know, so they're diversifying the audience.
I'm pretty sure they've done that for a while.
Okay. All right. That's good.
What Lion King was about, I think.
Okay. Well, that's great. We got Small Talk. We've got Pauly Shore. We've got Surfing a Huge Wave on a Motorcycle. And we have the first hip-hop Broadway show about Alexander Hamilton, of all people. I love that incongruity.
You show up to a party with these three things, you're like the king. You're the king of the party.
They're just going to carry you home on their shoulders.
Uh-huh. You're in automatically.
Well, Dave, I need you to introduce this next segment for us because it's new. This is a world debut here.
Poetry Face-Off, Steele. This came from a text message Zach sent to me. He wrote something like, why can't Steele ever read like some Shel Silverstein or something that's not totally depressing? And I thought, Steele can't. Steele, he can't possibly do it. There's only one person that could do it on this show, and that's me. So we're going to have a poetry face-off. Steele's reading a poem. I'm going to read a poem. And Zach, you're deciding who wins.
This might be the first time I've paid attention to poetry on the show.
Well, thanks a lot. This is the last time you'll be appearing as a guest, and you're a biased judge. So anyway, no, I'm just kidding. Okay, guys, the poem I'm going to read today is by a woman named Mary Oppen. She's not super well-known as a poet, but she was married to a poet that I love and admire named George Oppen. She published a single book. It's very slim. And this is the final poem from that book. It's not titled.
Can I ask real quick, where does she rank on the top 500 poets of all time?
On the list? Do you
know? Top 500?
I don't know if she cracked the 500. She's unranked. She's an unranked challenger.
Oh, wow. We'll see. We'll see what she does.
So this is the last poem of the book. I come as a guest, entering my own life, and the tree that lends me its strength. What my mother's said, the dreams I disappear into and sleep. In safety, I dream danger. I open my eyes, startled that I am safe. We walk in autumn stubble, the field not ours, small houses, unfurnished, empty. We enter, and it is our home. It's Mary Oppen.
Thank you. Zach, initial thoughts?
It didn't rhyme.
Yep.
I am as big of a connoisseur of poetry as Dave is as jazz music. But it was pretty. There were some good I have no idea. I have no idea how to critique poetry.
You're doing great so far. You're just blowing it up.
Still, you can put this in your thesis here.
Poetry for Dummies.
No, this is good. Okay. So, I brought my challenger. I guess Dave's got something. I mean, he rigged this because he knew what the terms of the contest were. But
Dave pretty much knows that I'm a sucker for limericks, so.
But I was a man from Nantucket.
I'm going to throw you a curveball. I was originally going to do some Shel Silverstein, of course, the great modern poet. I went to poemhunter.com. And I started looking through the list of top 500 poets of all time, constantly changing, going up and down. It's a huge thing, I think, in the poetry community, just constantly trying to get into the top 500. Steele, I searched for you. You're not in the top 500, buddy.
Well,
it's very, very good.
It's a cutthroat business, man.
Well, this guy ranks at, I believe he's 182 right now.
Well, as of when? I mean, these rankings are changing constantly. Was this today's ranking?
No, this is from last week.
Stale data. Who knows where he's at now?
Maybe just me exposing him on the show, he'll pop up into the top 150. That's kind of what I'm hoping for him today. But this is David Berman.
Hey, is that Chris Berman, the sports announcer's brother?
Yeah, cousin, actually. Okay. Cousin. Talented man. Also loves sports. Lead singer of the Silver Jews. So this is a poem called Snow. Walking through a field with my little brother Seth, I pointed to a place where kids had made angels in the snow. For some reason, I told him that a troop of angels had been shot and dissolved when they hit the ground. He asked who had shot them, and I said a farmer. Then we were on the roof of the lake. The ice looked like a photograph of water. Why, he asked, why did he shoot them? I didn't know where I was going with this. They were on his property, I said. When it's snowing, the outdoors seems like a room. Today I traded hellos with my neighbor. Our voices hung close in the new acoustics, a room with the walls blasted to shreds and falling. We returned to our shoveling, working side by side in silence. But why were they on his property, he asked. David Berman, 182.
Man, Dave, talk about an uplifting poem.
All right, Zach. Thoughts and then a final judgment.
All right, so once again, I am the least qualified person that you've ever had on this show to judge a poem contest. Well, in every poetry face-off I've ever seen in real life has to do with it's more hip-hop based and they're just dissing each other and it rhymes fantastically.
Yeah. Well, Dave's was like, get off so the I, lawn. I'm, I had some of that in there.
Exactly. So I'm purely going off of overall feelings that I had while reading the poem. And you know, Steele's just made me feel a little bit better than Dave's.
No!
Dave's just made me feel like, you know, the... So
nobody died in my poem because a farmer shot him.
is that a first on this show where no one died in your poem due to farmer violence?
I just thought I'd play against type this time. Mary Oppen, she's at least 181 by Zach's estimation.
Dang. I'll check.
Well,
I'll
I'm check sure the top 500 takes into account the entire body of work, not just a single poem. But really, had either of you guys read The Giving Tree, you would have won. That's all you had to do.
You had it in your hands and you dropped it. Zach, you've been a great, great judge. I really appreciate your fine taste and excellent knowledge in poetry. Dave, you're going to have to try a little harder if you want to take my face off.
Next time, I'm just going from number one on the top 500 poets, whoever's up there. It's a constantly changing list. If you want to check that out, you go to poemhunter.com.
Who is number one, Dave? Like, who currently holds the title?
Who's got the belt?
Dave's
not sure. He's going to have to click and find
out. I'm pulling it up. I know Shel Silverstein is he's number two. Number one, Maya Angelou. What do you think about that, Steele?
I know why the caged bird sings, guys. That's a great, great book that's not poems. But Maya Angelou, she's inspired everybody. I mean, Barack Obama's a big fan.
Kenan Thompson does a mad impression on SNL.
I did not know that. That's great.
Oh, pretty good.
So we got some poems. That was our first face-off. We're going to do a little quick-hitting segment here we call Off the Chain Corporate Hijinks. Some light frivolity that the people at large corporations have done to ruin hundreds of people's lives. That was not a good sentence either. But anyway, we have some things that corporations have done that have been bad. And Dave, this was another one of your ideas. You started in a great new segment that just was opened up the floodgates.
Steele, I wanted you to be comfortable during this show. So I came up with this. I knew you'd love it. And I put it on the document. When I looked back, you'd added like 100 different corporate scandals. I'm impressed. But of course, this came to mind because of the VW, the Volkswagen thing, where they just pulled one of the classic all-time corporate hijinks, the old emissions switch trigger thing. Classic hijink. I think we've all seen this before. The old, when you're getting your emissions checked on your clean diesel vehicle, emissions look great. As soon as that's done, it's emitting everything that it possibly can into the environment. Well done, VW.
Yeah, that software. That's something to giggle about.
Those guys are, they're just joking around back there in Germany, high-fiving each other.
You know, and I think it fits well with this long history of German corporate malfeasance, because it was 70 years ago when the majority of German companies were using slave labor and murdering people. So, keeping it classy, Germany. Thanks a lot.
No, let's bring it back. Let's keep it on the hijinks, Steele. Come on.
Well, obviously, professional football.
Oh, yeah.
The NFL, they have been essentially contributing to brain damage of their employees and trying to squash and directly challenge any scientific study that players are being brain damaged and drinking antifreeze and killing themselves at the end of their careers. But hey, no biggie. It's a popular sport. As long as you wear your helmet, you'll be fine.
NFL, come on, guys. That's a hijink. A hijink and a half.
Hey, but I will say the pressing issue is how inflated are the footballs? That's what we really need to be arguing about, not the massive evidence that a huge percentage of retired NFL players have a degenerative brain disease.
And I, honestly, that's really an impressive, like, that should be on this list of corporate hijinks. NFL, just like, hey, how could we stay in the news cycle all year long and make people not think about how we're destroying brains? We'll do this football thing. Deflated footballs. This is great.
Classic good misdirection. Hijink. Classic misdirection. The old fumble rooski.
How about you, Zach? You got any corporate hijinks?
Many good ones.
Any good ones?
Let's start with Enron. You've got a utility company. Everything goes into deregulation, meaning the consumers finally had the choice to choose which energy provider they wanted. So Enron starts losing mass profits. But rather than say, hey, if we're losing money hand over fist, they develop all these fake companies named after Star Wars characters.
What? I did not know that part.
That start buying up Enron's debt. So on paper, it looks like Enron's selling this money, like just making money off these companies when there's actually no real transaction going on. And meanwhile, the entire leadership of the company is just saying, hey, you guys, we're doing great. Profits are booming. And just pushing all of the employees of the company, buy our stock. Push it. It's doing great. You guys need to really invest in the company. Buy the stock. So the stock just explodes, reaches an all-time high, I think somewhere, for some reason, I want to say around 120, wow. Which is really great. Yeah, I work for Pinnacle West, which is a utility company here in the Southwest. Anyways, and our stock's like $62 or something, which is pretty good. So Enron was like double this back in the 10, 12 years ago or so. So basically, the whole thing's just this giant bubble. And then all these employees of Enron that work inside the financial aspect of it, they're realizing like, hey, this isn't right, as well as other different financial institutions that are saying like, you guys, you're not releasing any kind of document saying exactly where your money's going. There's no like public information. And then finally, just the whole thing just burst. But before it burst, the chief officers all knew that, I think it was New York Times is going to release an article just saying like, Enron's full of crap. Uh-huh. And so they unloaded all of their stock. Nice. So the top three guys just unload millions of dollars of stock in the 3 days they had leading up to this big announcement. They bail out, they get all their money, and all of a sudden the entire employee force is just penniless. I mean, they lose all their stock, they lose their 401k, pensions, everything they've got going, as well as their jobs, you know, since the whole company folded.
I feel like we need a sweet sound effect for like, wah, wah, corporate hygiene.
Sad trombone. Wow, Zach. Enron. We got to love Enron. Dave, you got something else? Some crazy hijinks that corporations have been up to that you're just a fan of?
This one's great. Because anytime you can price gouge the poor, that is good hijink.
Especially when they're medically vulnerable. I mean, that's something special.
So this story's been making rounds. But it's been happening for a while now. Pharmaceutical companies are finding ways to get monopolies on generic drugs and then raising the prices of them, from asthma medication to recently in the news, this guy is getting a hold of stuff to treat like different parasites and stuff. And it the article I recently read is the doctor prescribed the medication, just assuming, and I've started prescribing medication. I never think about cost. I don't know how much these things are going to cost. You just know, like, your patient needs this medication. So he prescribes it. It's going to get rid of this parasite this patient has. He thinks it's going to cost $2. The patient comes back, I can't afford this. And the doctor's still thinking, oh, it's probably like $10. They just can't afford $10. And it's like $500. They're price gouging on these old generic medications. And they're price gouging poor people. The people without insurance are the ones that are getting completely screwed. Now they're just going around with a parasite. It is fantastic corporate hijinks.
Yeah. I don't even want to touch banking, Dave, because that's just depressing. I read a great article, though, about the guy who was involved in fixing what's called the LIBOR, the LIBOR. It was the rate that they publish internally that London-based banks lend money to each other at. And he basically arranged for them to publish a fake number. They were fixing this number, and he was making tons of money off of it. And they realized, wait, this is like a major benchmark for the British exchange. Whoops. You know, so.
Wah, wah. Yeah,
so he's in jail now, which is pretty rare, but it happened. But the thing that really got me, actually, has been a couple of big banking scandals in the U.S. that aren't related specifically to, like, banking practices, but to lending practices and, in particular, discrimination around housing. This is an issue that's been real important to our family because my wife used to work in Fair Housing. But Countrywide Financial Corporation, they settled the case last year in which they paid several million dollars because they had discriminated over more than 200,000 qualified Hispanic and African American borrowers between 2004 and 2008. They've treated them differently and gave them like subprime, like they gave them terrible loans. And then they would also encourage non-applicant spouses to sign away their rights in jointly held property when the other spouse took out a loan in their name. And they would basically target minorities for this.
What?
This is happening in the last 10 years in America. And they essentially admitted they did it and paid, you know, X number of millions in fines. But the most recent one has just been settled. There's a huge bank that has like, let me look at that, $35 billion worth of assets. It's called the Hudson City Savings Bank. And it's mostly centered in like Philadelphia, New York. They built hundreds of branches in the last several years. And they have a big map that shows where they built their branches. They deliberately avoided opening any branches in majority Hispanic and black neighborhoods. So they'll offer all of these loans to homeowners, and it just so happens that no blacks or Hispanics are applying for loans with them, so they're not serving them with any loans because they're deliberately not building their banks in their neighborhoods so that they make it super, super hard for minorities to get loans from them. And so they just agreed to pay $33 million to settle this complaint. And this is happening like in our contemporary society in America. It's just mind-blowing.
And meanwhile, in my old neighborhood in Mesa that was predominantly Latino, there's on every corner, there's those cash checking, just predatory loan shops. Jeez. Everywhere.
When I lived in Utah, the best job that I could find in Logan, Utah, this was pre-bus driving days, I worked for a place called Check and Go. There was just one of these predatory. It was the worst thing ever. And I remember I'd ask people like, hey, what are you getting the loan for? Which is not something you're supposed to do. It's just if they qualify, you give them the money, to which they repay $20 per $100 that they borrow.
Holy cow.
Right, which is insane. And they have to repay it for their next paycheck. But I remember this old lady came in. I'm like, well, you know, what's the money for? She's like, my cat died and I need to get him cremated. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, rough week. Your cat died. And you're short on money in the same week. She's like, oh, no, my cat's been dead for 6 months, and I just need to free up some room in the freezer now.
Oh.
But that's the mentality of the people that are coming in. Like, that's who these corporations are preying off of. And I,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I was a part of it for the better part of a semester.
Hey, well, let's switch to a little happier topic. I mean, corporations that never do any harm. Candy companies, chocolate makers, Willy Wonka.
Nestle?
What?
You're talking about Nestle.
Say it ain't so, Zach.
Oh, man. Nestle is probably the most awful, terrible company you could possibly imagine. And the thing is, they own everything. Oh, they own, like, nice. Name a product. And, I mean, there's all kinds of, like, dog food for your dog. There's the Gerber brand, Carnation. You know, all these things that you use for your baby. L'Oreal they own. All the different candies, bottled water. They have
I love these products, Zach. I love what they're making.
These are just hygiene, Dave. Don't worry. It's just hygiene.
I love my Nestle's Quick. I drink Nestle's Quick almost every day. There can't be anything wrong with Nestle.
Well, Nestle Quick might be all right, but particularly within their water. I mean, they'll show up to these communities. They'll build a water plant where they tap into the aquifer and they just go bottling millions of gallons of water per day, where they pay fractions of a cent per thousands of gallons. I mean, they pay absolutely nothing for use of this water, drain the aquifers. I mean, right now in California, they're like the second highest consumer of water, which they're paying absolutely nothing, and they're not cutting anything back amongst the entire drought.
Hey, but at least they're selling it for like $1 a bottle. That's a great deal.
Great deal, and it costs them. They pay way more to ship that bottle. But the worst Nestle story that I'm aware of. So
just hygiene, of course, though. Remember, it's just hygiene.
This is a hygiene.
This is a good practical joke on the wonderful people in Africa, where
I think we all can appreciate one of those.
So Nestle's showing up in these developing countries and trying to establish its brand. And so it brings in baby formula.
Oh.
For the first time ever, they're bringing in baby formula to these people, and they're like, it's great, you should try it. Here's a free sample. So they're getting these moms hooked on this baby formula where then they're – so they give them just enough formula to where their milk dries up.
Oh, great.
And they can't produce enough for the baby. So they have absolutely no choice but to continue getting formula, in which case, you know, they start charging them and gouging prices. But the worst part is Nestle knows that these moms don't have access to clean water, you know, to mix the formula.
Hey, well, lucky for those moms, I think Nestle has a deal to sell water. Is that true?
Pretty much. But on top of everything, I mean, so infant mortality rates are 10-15% higher in each of these countries where they've been doing this, just because these babies are getting all these waterborne illnesses, that diarrhea and just disease and all these, and it's just, it continues on over and over and over, and just this constant pattern of everything they're doing, to the point where their CEO has come out and said publicly on numerous occasions, water is not a human right. Water rights should be completely privatized and allow corporations to distribute clean water to the citizens of the world.
I agree with that. Also, I think oxygen as well. We should put that in there too.
Probably, you know, just any kind of, you know, major element that we need. Dirt, if you want to start farming, you need to start paying for dirt and just any kind of mineral rights.
Well, hey, those are some funny hijinks we've covered. We've covered banking. We've covered big pharma. We've covered Nestle's gifts to the world. The only thing we didn't really touch on was Bhopal. We'll have to save that for another time, Dow Chemical. This will be a recurring segment. We'll have some hijinks every couple of months to just keep it light on the show.
Yeah, we want to bring people up, bring a little smile to your face. So, come on, Nestle. I just want to elbow them a little bit, give them a little ribbing.
You Nestle child. Okay, so we've got some Unchained Melodies, and this week's pretty exciting. I think this is a cool theme, and I think we're going to have some good stuff here. We're just going to play some great cover songs. Who wants to start us off here?
I'll start it off.
Yeah,
I'm worried, though, that once I throw this out there, I don't know if what you guys got is going to compare.
We've been lagging behind you the last episode, too, so just people are expecting a little more from you anyway.
Well, I've got some happy tunes once again for you.
Nice.
So obviously Beatles, great band, fantastic songwriting, probably the most covered band of all time.
Oh, probably.
So I hate when it's like, hey, we're a cover band that plays bars. We're going to play the song the exact same way. I love it when a band takes a song and just owns it, makes it this whole new different thing. So we're going to do a Got to Get You Into My Life. I mean, just super, super great song, really happy. So Earth, Wind & Fire, they then took this song and just blew it up. It's so much energy in this song.
If your foot's not tapping and you're not just like happy to be alive, there's something seriously wrong with you right now.
And we didn't even get to the first verse on that one either.
Seriously.
It just gets better.
That is a fantastic cover. And you know, I've heard that song a million times, but I don't think I ever really realized, oh yeah, that is the Beatles song, Got to Get You to My Life. They made that almost feel like an original, even though it is clearly a cover. Yeah, now that you mention it.
That one was super catchy. Anytime I think super catchy, something everybody's going to enjoy, I think about the indie rock group Pavement. I think we all can agree that Pavement's just going to bring the rhythm and just make everybody want to smile and sing. But they do a cover of an REM song, also super upbeat, happy group. That's just fantastic. The original's terrific. The cover's great. It's called Camera.
Okay, so we're going to hear the REM version real fast.
Oh, yeah. Let's listen. And it takes a little bit of time to get going.
From the inside room, when the front room green becomes your special book, it was simple then. When the party lows, if we fall by the side.
Okay, so there's a flavor. We got some REM. And then here's Pavement's version.
In the corporate life, in the offices of double-digit floors, I've sat away with moves. It's a shame he never played, never learned no way to remind you I've got to remember.
Like they had a little, they're like, Michael Stipe, you were sad, but we're going to take the little slow it down meter and slide it up a little bit and take the emotion meter and move it a little further into the sad kind of emotive territory. Yeah.
And they're like, hey, Michael, you're kind of nailing some of these notes and that's not necessary. You don't need to sing totally on key for this one, Michael.
Yeah. All right. So talking about slowing songs down, I really do like acoustic covers where they just take a song and slow it down, and so like a dance song suddenly becomes like introspective and heartfelt and feeling. The one that I was going to do, I don't really love David Bowie, but it's a David Bowie cover, and here's the David Bowie original. It's called Let's Dance. We'll be right back.
on your red shoes and dance the blues.
So I hear
yes,
that and I think,
I know that song.
You're like, oh, a cover of that song would probably make me want to punch myself, right? So M. Ward, one of my favorite musicians, he decides he's going to cover this, and this is what he does to it. You ready? Song that's massively improved by being covered.
I think it's slightly less danceable. I'm going to be honest still. It's a little less dancing.
It's a slow dance. That's a song that you like take your clothes off and dance to, Dave.
You're really interested in taking your clothes off this evening.
I don't know, man. It's 11:45 in the p.m.
I could see some awkward junior high dance makeouts to that song.
So. Oh, yeah, definitely. And not so much with David Bowie.
But if you want to get him some great Bowie covers, just as a total aside, Brazilian artist called Seu Jorge, who did the entire Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou soundtrack, where it's all just him and an acoustic guitar doing Bowie covers. That's the entire soundtrack.
I never liked Life on Mars until I heard his cover.
So good. But unfortunately, I don't have another Bowie. I've got some Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Wind Cries Mary. Probably the most famous of the Jimi Hendrix songs.
And the clowns have all gone to bed. You can hear happiness.
It feels like a blaspheming act to fade that one out, but we got a taste.
All right, great song. So there's a guy from England, his name's Jamie Colum, young guy, piano player. He actually does a ton of different covers as well, but this one in particular was one of my very first ones that I heard of him and just fell in love with it. Let's go ahead. So it's Jamie Colum doing a Wind Cries Mary.
After all, the jacks are in the boxes. And the clowns have all gone to bed. You can hear happiness staggering on down the street. Footprints dressed in red. And the wind whispers Mary.
That's a bold choice to turn the guitar riffs into piano. That's really nice. I did not expect that.
No, he's done some really great stuff like that. He did another Radiohead, High and Dry. Beautiful version of it that he did. A lot of what happens is jazz is you cover other people's music and you just do your own thing with it. That's probably 90% of the entire genre's covers.
So is he an original songwriter as well, or is he mostly doing covers, as Jamie Colum?
It's probably 50-50. He's got some great stuff. So what do we got next?
Oh, guys, so you may or may not be aware that a lot of artists have covered songs and then made them into hits for themselves. In the 90s, this is a huge thing. Lots of really bad bands took a hit song and then just sped it up a lot. And then they had their hit song. And that's how they got their hit. Alien Ant Farm, Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal, yeah.
Classic.
Orgy, Blue Monday. This is just off the top of my head. The 90s, it was just, they couldn't stop doing this. But one that I really, that I think is just kind of fun and really representative of it, but not quite as crappy, is Mrs. Robinson, the classic Simon and Garfunkel, covered by the Lemonheads.
So here's the original, real fast for a flavor. And here is Evan Dando's interpretation.
Handsome man, too. Very handsome. Still, anybody can take a song and slow it down, but to take a song and speed it up, amazing.
I think you make a good point, Dave. There's something that's so of the era about the instrumentation. You hear that bass line and you're like, yep, that was recorded in the mid to late 90s.
Well, it's not just the instrumentation, but just the sound of it was so 90s.
The guitar, that kind of wall of grunge.
Just that super grungy guitar, that bass that kind of sounds like it's being played with nails.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, you really nailed that one. That's a great cover. All right, I'm going to close this out here. This is the great R. Kelly. The song is called The World's Greatest. Here's the original.
I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country, I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision.
So it's basically R. Kelly singing about how he's the world's greatest, right? Classic, slow jam, you got the feeling. If you want to take that song and make it great, you give it to the weirdest dude in music. And his name is Bonnie Prince Billy. And he covers The World's Greatest and makes it something special.
I am a mountain. I am a tall tree. Oh, I am a swift wind sweeping the country. I am a river. Down in the valley, oh, I'm a vision, and I can see clearly, if anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say,
I've listened to that song probably 100 times. I probably listened to it 50 times before I even heard R. Kelly's version. And I can't. R. Kelly's is just unlistenable. I cannot tolerate it whatsoever.
It's one of those cases for me where the cover transcends the original and you think that the roles have been reversed. Kind of like what the Earth, Wind, and Fire song was that you played, Zach. And the original in that case is a great song.
Or the entire Me First and the Gimme Gimme's catalog.
Yeah.
And of course, what the Lemonheads did with Mrs. Robinson, no one even remembers the original.
Yeah. And, you know, there was that Neil Diamond cover band that used to play Mesa that basically made people forget Neil Diamond as well. Diamond in the Rough. Yeah, remember them?
It was pretty much we stuck with the classics. I think the biggest change that we made to the actual music was in Sweet Caroline, instead of it being an entire horn section, was just me on a saxophone.
Whoa. The piano player plays the sax as well?
A couple other things on top of that.
But, oh, boy.
He's talented. Mostly piano.
Well,
Dave knew that. Yeah, Dave witnessed it.
Yeah, I took off my shirt when you got the saxophone out.
Live at Tempe Marketplace, if I remember correctly.
I'm not the only person obsessed with taking their clothes off, it sounds like.
Hey, I've been going pantsless the whole night.
Exactly.
So.
I don't know why Dave's picking on me.
If the saxophone comes on, clothes are going to come off. It's just a foregone conclusion.
You're pronouncing it weird. Yeah. We call it the saxophone where I'm from.
That's right, because we make love with sax.
All right, so it's time for Book Wisdom, and it's a sad moment because it means the episode's almost over. Well, I have a poem, Dave, and Dave, you're always saying I read depressing poems. And
yeah,
so this one is...
depressing?
Yeah, kind of, but it's not entirely. This one's beautiful. This is by a guy named Brian Tier. Yeah, he teaches in Baltimore. The poem is called... When we are on the right track, we are rewarded with joy. Wretched thou art, wherever thou art. I sit and work on a line and lead into the pain. My mind continues trying to think, and all I come up with is a texture without ideas. And to whatever thou turnest, the body I have is the body I once had, but they could not differ more. The teacher Agnes says, abstract form holds meaning beyond words. I turned the pages of the old book. The way certain feelings come to us with no discernible worldly cause. The teacher Buddha says, the practitioner agitated by thoughts I have not held since childhood, makes stronger their bondage to suffering and the sting of becoming. During the time, illness makes me feel most tied to the material world. Its binding broken, its brittle paper. I sit in meditation, and sunlight from the window calms my nausea. Since the emergency, I feel such sharp tenderness toward common objects. Its dog-eared corners torn at the folds. Sort of attached to the white wall, white door, white dust on the wood floor. Mostly pain is an endless present tense, without depth or discernible shape. Miserable are all who have not. An image or memory lends it a passing contour or a sort of border. The white door opened against the white wall snuffs headache's first flare. A sense of present life's corruption. I remember a man patiently crying as doctors drained his infected wound. Lying on the gurney in my hospital gown, we suffered from having been being. But much more miserable are those adjacent and precarious, the way a practitioner sits alone on a cushion, resting alone, unwearied, alone, taming himself, yet I was no longer alone, in love with it. There's the poem, Dave.
Thank you, Steel. I just appreciate you, Steel. I'm glad that you're able to bring these things into my life and bring me just a little bit of thought and contemplation and poetry, when otherwise my life would be completely devoid of at least poetry.
You're welcome, Dave. It's a little book wisdom.
Well, it was great talking to you guys again.
Zach, once again, you've been a treat, a real pleasure, a class act. I'm surprised that you were friends with Dave.
Well, thanks, Steel. It's been a pleasure being on. Back-to-back guest.
I guess it's the miracle of geographical proximity, huh? You guys were neighbors?
Yeah.
That's how the friendship blossomed. Steel, that's how our friendship blossomed as well.
It's true. We live next to each other. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have the time of day for me.
No. Well, good night, guys. It was good talk.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm hosting this one, huh? I kept waiting for you to, like, to let's stop talking about Real Steel, but this is on me.
And I had an unanswered question before we started this, whether brass counted.
Steel, wind instrument, you're blown into brass. You got to answer these questions yourself, man.
Okay.
I'm not ready to go to bed. I want to talk about some more corporate hijinks.
Love the fair.